Good afternoon. We'll call the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is currently 1:34 p.m. Tuesday, April 24th. Present today, we've got Senator Keel and myself, Chairman Myers. We've got Senator Schauer calling in. Staff in the committee today, we've got Nancy Hemingway from Senate Records, as always. We've got Carson as our moderator. And, of course, Michaela Anderson, my committee aide. Quick reminder, of course, to silence your cell phones. Today, we've got quite a few people on the list to be speaking to us today. We're going to be doing an overview on the ports and harbors around the state of Alaska, the vast majority of which are municipal. So we're going to be starting off with Nils Andreessen from the Alaska Municipal League, giving us a very quick overview for the state, and then we're going to be delving into a number of individual ports and harbors directors from different places around the state. So, Mr. Andreessen, with that, if you could take it away, and if you could pause real quick in between each slide in case we have any questions.
Thank you. For the record, this is Nils Andreessen. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League. And thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I will try to go fast, and so I'll apologize in advance to Michaela for running through slides quickly and having too many. So for slide number two, municipal perspective, it is important to know that municipalities own the majority of Alaska's coastal infrastructure, coastal infrastructure that spans a coast that's larger than the entire U.S. coast. So that means 112 of 133 ports and harbors are owned by municipalities. And these are municipalities that aren't solely responsible for ports and harbors, that they have other responsibilities that range from police and hospitals to water and wastewater. But ports and harbors and coastal infrastructure generally contribute to their economic activity, public health, and safety. Next slide. Here's a map of all cities and boroughs in Alaska, and then for reference, next slide. Here are those same communities reduced down for those that have ports and harbors. Next slide. And further reduced down for those who are served by the Alaska Marine Highway System. And since there's not always good data for the entire port system, I wanted to spend just a couple minutes on the Marine Highway System, if that's okay. Next slide. So slide six. Just for the Marine Highway System, I think it's important to know, and I think it extends to broader port and harbor infrastructure, that there's a direct benefit to those communities, but there's an indirect benefit as well. And so even though there's a port on the coast that's served by the Marine Highway System in this case, that benefit extends well beyond the coast and to a full majority of Alaskans. Next slide. And that value just for those communities we've heard arguments kind of, well, don't they have airports? And yes, they do, most of them. But the value of port infrastructure is such that it means the local government is better able to respond to being a good partner of the state. That means it's got more than likely stronger economic activity. It's contributing differently and more to public education, to public safety, to the state's retirement system. And it's taking on more debt related to infrastructure in those communities. Next slide. So this slide eight is related to statewide planning. And it's important maybe to know that the state doesn't really have a good plan for coastal infrastructure and especially for municipal infrastructure, that there are federal requirements for planning. Within the state's long-range transportation planning, that when it comes to ports, the state relies on the Corps of Engineers. My understanding is that the Corps of Engineers hasn't done a study since 2010 There are statutes related to a state transportation plan, but there's not good ways to bring in these municipal assets to statewide planning. And I would argue that that's one change that you might be beneficial to differently think about how municipal owned infrastructure is contributing to broader statewide impact to economic activity and intersects with intermodal connections with state infrastructure. Next slide. Any questions so far? So planning is one piece of it. The other piece of it is funding. And because there's not really a mechanism for state or statewide planning, port and harbor infrastructure is left out of statewide planning or state planning for funding of that infrastructure. That within the state's STIP, the statewide transportation infrastructure plan, there's some funding for AMH terminals, not the broader port infrastructure. But beyond that, there's nothing. And the way that the legislature has addressed that, in large part because it transferred a lot of those port and harbor assets to local governments over the years, was through two programs, the Municipal Harbor Facility Match Grant Program, which I think others might talk more about. And then the this is often known as the HB 528, which was the bill that created it, or the Transportation Infrastructure Debt Service Reimbursement Program. You'll find that within the Department of Revenue's Debt Management book. But these are kind of the two sole ways for the state to, beyond just capital projects, to invest in coastal infrastructure. The matching grant program has been effective in its past, but is each year up for appropriation. And while local governments are committed to their side, it does take a match from the state. When it comes to reimbursement of past port and harbor improvements, the state has, I think even within this current budget, not been reimbursing local governments for those investments. So that ranges from Aleutians East improvements to False Pass in Accutan to Mat-Su improvements over time. Next slide. So slide 10, I mentioned the Corps of Engineers study that or work that occurred in 2010. There was a they produced and after that a regional ports and harbor study. That was a pretty thorough compendium of regional needs as it relates to ports and harbors. It produced a number of recommendations. It also captured what the value of that need looked like. It hasn't been updated since 2011. Next slide. AML, just this last year, tried to replicate some of what was in the Corps of Engineers regional study. First, in terms of intermodal connections, we weren't able to capture all the ports and harbors, but just from survey participants, it's clear that ports don't end at the port, that they connect back to within communities and then into and to statewide infrastructure. Next slide. That each port and harbor provides a different level of service, based on user needs. That many of those are critical, and where there are fewer provision of services, those are improvements that could be made and that port directors are often considering. Next slide. In terms of capital project costs, so based on the 2010 assessment that the Corps had done, again, we replicated that. And so just for the survey respondents that responded to ours and consistent with the Corps, we found that, roughly speaking, there's still $1.6 billion in planned projects, and that the need during that 10-year period has roughly doubled, that $166 million more was needed in 2010, and today that stands at just under $400 million. Next slide. I would note that while we completed this survey last year, it's also true that the pandemic has forced different types of decision making at the local level and often deferred capital project costs. But there's still quite an increase in capital needs or projects or spending plans from those communities that had responded to our survey. Next slide. Here is, you're familiar with the infrastructure scorecard. We, you know, tried to do the same thing within our survey. Others might speak to this, but continue to find that, at least for those respondents that we had, that in many ways, our infrastructure needs to be, you know, continue to be invested in and improved. Next slide, 16. The infrastructure report card overall gave Alaska's ports and harbors a D. And if you think of those respondents to our survey who probably had the most capacity to respond to a 70-question survey, you can see maybe where the difference in that grade lies, where the responses to ours were more like, you know, B minuses, and here you have a D. But it's clear that there is great need when it comes to coastal infrastructure. Next slide. And that need actually translates into value, that if we can make investments into ports and harbors, that's pretty critical for Alaska's economic activity and especially to its transportation system, that it's through port and harbor infrastructure that the majority of Alaska's goods come in to the state and exit. Next slide. This is really my closing slide too, and there will be other speakers who can speak more knowledgeably and technically about ports and harbors in Alaska. But this final slide I borrowed from Northern Economics and really asks us to think differently about levels of investment into port and harbor infrastructure. That there was a time when the state made decisions to make high investments, large investments into this infrastructure, and now is just as and maybe even more critical a time to continue with that investment. And that's something that local governments are very focused on. And I think if the state had a similar level of planning or a mechanism for that planning, we could think differently within the state government about how infrastructure development could occur as it relates to ports and harbors. With that, thank you. We've assembled a great team of presenters from a variety of different ports. But I think I can turn it back to you, Chair, with appreciation for this opportunity.
All righty, thank you. Do we have any questions for Mr. Andreasen? Senator Machicki.
Yeah, hello, Nils. Just question for you. Do you have a list of comments from the D grade versus the facility scorecard, which is, you know, probably averaging a B minus? It'd be interesting to see what the expectations are for, I mean, we have a huge variation in port infrastructure in this state from extremely high quality to a river mouth with a few moorings in it, right? Be interesting to see what they base their D final grade on there. Is that something that you have comment-wise?
For the Chair, Senator Machicki, I think if a later presenter doesn't touch on it, I can follow up and provide the committee with more information. Some of the difference might just be explained by who responded to which survey, but we definitely have more detail related to those that grading and what that looks like in comparison with the infrastructure report card.
Okay, I can wait, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so moving on then. All right, so Mr. Andreessen, who do you have listed next? We've got quite a few presenters, but I wasn't sure what the order was going to be.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think the next presenter will speak much more knowledgeably than me about ports and harbors specifically. Rachel Lord is the Executive Director of the Alaska Association of Port Administrators and Harbor Masters, or vice versa, Harbor Masters and Port Administrators, something. And she and I think Carl Yucatel and CBJ can talk more about a lot of these issues. Rachel?
Hi, thanks, Nils. Through the chair, thank you so much for the opportunity. My name is Rachel Lord. I'm the Executive Secretary of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators. And thank you for the opportunity. I'm going to go even faster through this slide deck to make space for all the folks here. Next slide, Michaela. Thank you. The association has been in existence for over 40 years. We were officially incorporated with the state in 1999. The core purpose of the association is to promote and serve Alaska's ports and harbors. We do that through advocacy, through acting as a communication and information resource, and through promoting sustainable, safe, and secure infrastructure. Next slide. Our membership includes 43 municipal port and harbor facilities. That includes 39 municipal Alaska municipalities, the Alaska Railroad, two Alaska Native associations, and also the Port of Seattle Fisherman's Terminal. Next slide. This is a map showing you the distribution of our members across the state of Alaska, our port and harbor members across the state. Next slide. This map is from the Department of Transportation, the State Department of Transportation. It's from May 2018. This is showing the distribution of public port and harbor facilities across the state. And if you go to the next slide, Michaela, this is where you're going to see, so when Nils mentioned there are 133 facilities across the state, 112 of them are municipal, it is, I think, valuable to recognize the way the department refers to a facility. There can be up to 10 port and harbor facilities, what the department calls facilities, within a single municipality. Next slide, please. So taking this into consideration, the association's membership represents around 90% of Alaska's municipal ports and harbor facilities. Next slide. We also have over 50, almost 60 industry members and agency partners that help run and or help create and sustain our facilities. Next slide. And the association's really predicated upon the belief that we are all very interconnected and that the majority of communities in the state of Alaska are dependent on Alaska's port and harbor infrastructure for transportation. Next slide. So to give a really quick overview of the type of work the association does, we do focus on networking and resource sharing. So we have annual conferences, we have a monthly newsletter, a email listserv for all of our members, and we also provide training opportunities through national partnerships. We do a lot of advocacy work. We work with you all at the legislature every year, as well as with our federal delegation to promote issues important to our members. And then we also support efforts for information gathering. So we work to support efforts to track and understand infrastructure needs, economic benefits, regulatory hurdles, and other priority questions that our members have. Next slide. When we talk about port and harbors, we really talk, you know, there's so much infrastructure associated with what we would consider a port and a harbor. Docks and floats, ramps, utilities, uplands, maintenance and staffing. There's a lot that is embodied in this kind of complex system. Next slide. The association is a firm advocate for the Municipal Harbor Grant Program. These projects are prioritized shovel-ready capital projects, critical capital projects. There's an established vetting process, and the funds are leveraged. It doubles the funds with 50% of local match is required to be in hand before a municipality applies for these monies. Next slide, please. So just recapping, the program significantly leverages local dollars, and it establishes what those critical, it's the established critical needs for our intermodal transportation system. Next slide. Every year, the association advocates to the legislature with resolutions of support from not only our membership as a whole, also the Alaska Municipal League, and communities, individual communities from around the state. The association's board of directors strongly supports and encourages a significant sum within this program to fund harbor recapitalization efforts for the next, you know, maybe decade. Next slide. Just a quick note on terminology. We talk about ports and harbors, and these words do have different definitions. A harbor is often considered a marina outside, and ports tend to focus on the movement of cargo on and off of vessels. Next slide. In Alaska, we often use these terms interchangeably, and a lot of our facilities around the state provide all of the services from that a marina and a port provide. It is helpful to know that there are some federal and other funding opportunities that do have very specific definitions for water depth, user groups, et cetera. Next slide. The remaining slides here are just a few community notes from members who are not presenting to you today. We just sent out a request if anybody had anything. These are some photos from Dillingham and a list of communities that Dillingham acts as a hub for. Next slide. The Aleutians East Borough sent in some schematics and photographs from ongoing projects in Acatan and Sandpoint. Next slide. CAIC has been very actively working on improving their infrastructure. They, along with a number of other communities through the state, will be putting in a port infrastructure development program grant through the federal grant proposal through the Federal Maritime Administration. Next slide. This is an overview of the community of Skagway and the infrastructure they have there. And similar to many, if not most, facilities around the state, Skagway is serving not just the community there, but a larger economic engine regionally. Next slide. Amonic is a really great example of a community, or it's a really unique example. They are a developing brand new port. They did receive a $23 million build grant. They are, I believe, seeking additional funds. They are building a port facility and a port department there in Amonic to, again, serve regionally the Lower Yukon communities. Next slide. So we have a lot of great opportunities ahead, and strong Alaska communities make a strong Alaska. Next slide, last slide. This is my contact information, and the association stands available to provide resources and information to you all at any point in the game. So thank you so much for the opportunity. And Carl Yucatel is next, from past president of the association.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Lord. Any questions before we move on? Looks like we're good for now. Mr. Yucatel.
Thank you, Chair Myers. For the record, my name is Carl Yucatel. I'm the Juneau Port Director. I'm the past president of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators. I'm the past president of the American Society of Civil Engineers, Alaska Section. I'm also the author of the Ports and Harbors Report Card for the state of Alaska. So my presentation today is somewhat of a prequel to a release of our report card for the state that is scheduled later this spring. Next slide, please. So in 2017, when the state first did our report card, the Ports and Harbors received a grade of D. And overall, we evaluated the American Society of Civil Engineers Alaska Section, reviewed 9 infrastructure elements. Overall, the state received a C minus. A D that Ports and Harbors received was the lowest among the 9 looked at, tied with the ferry system and water and wastewater. The process is evaluated against 8 criteria such as condition, capacity, funding, future needs, safety, resiliency, and it is vetted through a national process through the American Society of Civil Engineers. Senator Muchicki was asking about the low grade. Essentially, I have there what was really dragging on that low grade lack of a deep water port, the Port of Alaska, then the Anchorage was really in nowhere where they're at today. And Southeast Alaska was still struggling with the ability to accommodate larger cruise ships that were coming to Southeast. And the small boat harbor program was and remains uncertain. Next slide, please. So I'm often fond to say that Alaska is a maritime state. We need to act like one. We have more coastline than the entire continental United States. Three of the top 10 fishing ports in Alaska and 17 of the top 100 by catch value are in Alaska. For Southeast, you know, tourism is our largest private employer, and the need to ensure that we have we meet the needs of the tourism industry is critical. Next slide, please.
Real quick, got a question from Senator Matiki.
Yeah, Carl, good to see you. It was good to see Rachel as well. I've worked with both of you quite a bit. On the grade slide, it seems like that grade, and I don't want to get nitpicky about it, but if you put our port and harbor investment on a per capita basis and evaluated on something that's fit for purpose for the state's recent history, you know, commercial fishing, as well as, you know, recreational harbors and if you split it between industrial, commercial, and sport, boy, this grade D to me looks somewhat. And I know you hate to hear it, politically motivated, but we've invested significantly in ports and harbors in the state. And you know, I'm a port and harbor guy. I depend on it for part of my living. I get it, as well as my recreation. Would you share the thought that port and harbor investment services and sort of infrastructure actually deserves a D in the state of Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Matiki, again, that's 2017, and we are in the process of rewriting it, and I'm not at liberty to disclose what the next grade will be that will be released later this spring, but we have made improvements since 2017. Again, where we were at in 2017 with the struggles that the Port of Anchorage had, where we were struggling with developing a deep water Arctic port. We're much further down the road than we were, you know, just four short years ago. So I believe that grade is accurate. I think that moving forward, it will improve.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I could suggest some other metrics to be considered in comparison with other states, again, population-wise, and I wouldn't call us a D because of, I mean, the Arctic Deepwater Port is a relatively new concept. We know about the struggles in the Port of Anchorage, Port of Alaska. We continue to secure the small boat harbor matching grant, so there are other metrics I'd feed into that I personally don't feel that Alaska has a D grade on port and harbor infrastructure, but I'll look forward to the new grade. It shouldn't be a wish list for the future. I think it should be a rating on the reality of resources available to us, what we'd be able to provide, and should have somewhat less weight on what the future should look like. That's just my humble opinion.
Mr. Yucatel, if along those lines, if you could just, do you know what the average grade is across the country for ports and harbors? Do we average a C? I'm just wondering how that came out.
Yes. Chair Meyer, so the the American Society of Civil Engineers just released their latest report card, and overall through the country, they gave a national grade of a B to ports and harbors.
Okay, thank you. All right, go ahead.
And the slide that should be, I can't see the slide that's being shown, but it should be the ports and harbors factoids, slide 4. And I'll try and be brief because we already talked about the number of small boat harbors throughout the state. And it's somewhat misleading because that also includes launch ramps and remote harbors. But basically, we have about 50 ports and harbors. In comparison to the continental United States, there's in excess of 10,000 harbors and marinas throughout the lower 48. And next slide. As I mentioned before, the RA Deepwater Draft Point port was a pull on the grade 4 years ago. Joy Baker will speak to this more specifically. One thing I like to point out is the distance between, and when people ask, well, why should we care about the Arctic? Why should we care about Nome? The distance between Nome and LA is the same distance as Nome to Tromsø, Norway. Next slide, please. This is a slide that mentioned the need to invest in Southeast for cruise ships. The Panama Canal expansion in 2016 has really been a game changer for cruise lines, requiring larger vessels or the economies of scale with the cruise ships. And so prior to 2017, the Port of Juneau did not have full capacity for Neo-Panamax size cruise ships. We were the two docks you see there, we could only accommodate 965-foot vessels and an 800-foot vessel at the two public docks, and now we can accommodate the Neo-Panamax cruise ships. Next slide, please. And then also the fact that tourism is a regional market, so not only did Southeast Juneau with their public ports expand, but also private ports in Hoonah and Ward Cove in Ketchikan have also expanded. And again, this all adds capacity to the cruise ship market, which benefits the region. Next slide. And the support of Alaska, I know Port Director Buffalo is here. I will skip this. The next slide is the Alaska DOT Harbor Facility Grant. This is critical for the sustainability of small boat harbors in Alaska. And I know we like to think it's fully funded. It's only been fully funded twice since its inception in 2006. It is something that port directors, harbor masters around the state really need certainty in funding. Moving on, next slide. This goes to Senator Machicki's
If you could hold off a second.
Valid.
We got one more question from Senator Machicki for you.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, Carl, if the Harbor Grants fund was fully funded for the last 10 years, could we put that work on the street? Is there local match available for full funding of the Harbor Grant program?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki. The requirement for a small boat harbor municipality to submit a grant, they have to have that 50% grant in hand. You cannot apply for a harbor matching grant without the money in hand. So that is fully shovel ready, or at least the money is available from the municipality.
Right. So that's what I was asking. If the program had been fully funded for the last decade, well, they're shovel ready. Funded 50% match funded programs that could have who's going without? I guess that's the question. Are there projects that could occur that have not been able to be funded?
To the chair, Senator Machicki, I think the answer is yes. I think what happens, and I can only speak for Juno, but if somebody submits a grant and they're not selected or it's not funded, they'll just go after, they'll just construct with half the available funding and kind of breathe some life support into that infrastructure.
Okay, thank you. Right.
Thank you. Please continue.
I'm on slide 10. So Senator Machicki spoke about the grant, the availability of grants, and that is something that has improved. That here's a list of projects that federal funding was available. I can, again, speak for the Port of Juneau. We have we submit bill grants annually. We have not been successful in the last 5 years. Next slide, last slide. And as I mentioned, I'm not I can't disclose the new grade. It's got to be vetted at the national level, but there are many things that are trending up that are listed here. So in the 4 years since the last report card, things are trending up. Again, I will argue the small harbor grant program is something that still remains uncertain. Thank you, Senator Myers.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Yucatel. Next one I've got listed in my book is the Port of Alaska at Anchorage, unless somebody has a reason to deviate from that. I believe we're moving on to Mr. Rebufo.
Very good. That's the first time it's been said right in a very long time. Through the chair, and for the record, my name is Steve Rebufo. I am the director here at the Port of Alaska in Anchorage. And I'm going to go through some slides here and cover quite a bit of what's going on. We got a lot happening here, and I want to be able to cover it all as quickly as possible. So with that, first slide, please. And as has been alluded to by some of my colleagues, we are a maritime state. And if you're a logistician and you work and live in Alaska, you think like you live on an island. 90% of all the freight that comes into the state of Alaska comes on the water. Half of that crosses the docks here in Anchorage, and half of that continues to move on to destinations up and down the road and the rail system throughout the strip, throughout the state. So we touch the lives of about 75 to 85% of the state population with the goods that cross the docks here in Anchorage. In 2020, we had a record year in volume, pandemic notwithstanding. 4.7 million tons was the high mark in my 14 years here. And a lot of it had to do with refined petroleum product, particularly Jet A for the airport. But we stayed very busy and stayed open for business throughout the pandemic. We also had a record year with respect to revenue. $13.8 million was our revenue in 2020 compared to 12.7 in 2019, which is in the average range. Next slide, please. And to also keep the theme in mind, ports are not destinations for anything. They are nodes in a transportation system. And here in Anchorage, we are the connection point for the main road system. The Glenn Highway and the Seward Highway connect through Anchorage. We are 3/4 mile from the main rail yard for the Alaska Railroad, a 5-mile drive to Ted Stevens Airport. And right outside the gate, less than 4 minutes by truck, are the North Star Stevedore Terminal and the Alaska Marine Lines Terminal, and a lot of the freight that comes off of the cargo ships here will get put on those barges for delivery to Western Alaska. And we are the pipeline nexus between Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, Ted Stevens Airport, and the Nikiski Refinery that Marathon operates there. So your value added as a port is all in what are your connections to the transportation systems that get goods to the consumer. Next slide, please. We say we have three functions here at the port. Obviously, the first one is commerce. And this is what we do every day. This is where we make our money. And this is how we get the bills paid to maintain the facility. The second one is national defense. We are one of 17 commercial strategic seaports. The main commercial strategic seaport in Alaska, but there are a couple of secondaries in Whittier and Valdez. And we have a mission in support of U.S. Army Alaska. And we do a lot of deployments and redeployments through here. 20% of the cargo that crosses the docks here in Anchorage not only goes in support of the military missions of the bases, but it winds up on the store shelves and the commissaries and the exchanges and in the gasoline stations on all the military bases in the state. So that's a pretty tight connection with our friends at DOD. And lastly, we are a disaster response and resiliency function that we serve here. There is not a single federal or state disaster response plan that doesn't count on this port being around after the next big one to be part of the solution. We're challenged mostly by this one, but it is a mission that we have, and we stay in constant contact with everybody who does that kind of planning on a regular basis. Next slide, please. And you've heard us talk for many, many years. Carl has alluded to it, and it's in the report card plans. The condition of this facility, we are celebrating our, in September, we'll celebrate 60 years old. And we have, in fact, shown our age. We have a significant corrosion problem here. Some of the legislature has made it down here to the port to visit, and we've gotten them under the dock, and we've showed them that we are in a position where the best way we can handle this is to completely demolish and replace the infrastructure. We call that the Port of Alaska Modernization Program. And the goal going forward is to create a facility that's going to have the resiliency to be around for a very, very long time after we're done. Next slide, please. Next one's got a little animation in it. The first phase of this is called the Petroleum and Cement Terminal. We started the construction on the land side in 2017. In 2020, we ventured into the water for the first time and constructed that trestle and the platform that you see there. And if you go to the next slide, that's a photograph of what was left at the end of the 2020 construction season. Pacific Pilon Marine is the contractor who's got the work to complete this operation this summer. And we can go to the next slide now. And what we do now is turn this platform and trestle into a working dock. So the mooring dolphins go in, the catwalks to connect the mooring dolphins, the hose equipment that goes on top of that platform to offload fuel, the cement infrastructure for offloading the cement to put in that dome that is conveniently located now behind the dock. And then we tie into all the existing petroleum plumbing and through our valve yard to the 3.1 million barrels of petroleum storage here on the port. If all goes well, we will finish the construction in late November. And after all the testing that we need to do before we can declare it ready for operation, we hope to have a ribbon cutting sometime in early December. And we will certainly be inviting a lot of folks to come down here and take a look at the first new piece of infrastructure in over 20 years that's been added to your port. Next slide, please. So once we get the work done on that petroleum and cement terminal, the next phase is the prep work that needs to go into getting ready for the cargo dock, the main cargo dock replacement. The North Extension Stabilization Project is what you will see in the municipality's CAPSIS submission for this year. It is the only project that the municipality has submitted. The first two numbers on those on this slide here make $136 million. That's what the request is for. And what we need to do, what you're looking at there in the foreground, is what was created as part of the old failed expansion project. And that has unfortunately been declared unstable and has to be removed. You know, part of the responsibility, we believe, and part of the financing to finish that is going to come from the litigation that we're in right now with the Maritime Administration. But we hope to, you know, we hope to conclude that sometime in the early fall. But in the meantime, this is shovel ready and can get going. And with $136 million, we can begin that first phase of it, which is the next slide. We have to take a big chunk out. And that first chunk has to come out because once we start the construction on the cargo docks, we need to have maneuvering room for other vessels to safely make their way to the main dock since we stay open for business during construction. And Matson and Tote have some fairly sizable vessels. And if we didn't do this, we'd be trying to get them to dock inside a tub. Not so challenging in the summertime, but once you hit winter and you throw in ice and you throw in wind, it's dangerous and some would argue impossible. So before we can even begin that new construction, we have to remove that first portion of that north end. And with any money we get from the settlement, we should be able to finish that up, or we're going to find ourselves borrowing what we need to get it done, because this is a must-do and it's really important. It doesn't generate revenue out there, so we're challenged to get revenue bonds for it. But it's a necessity that we make that happen. And this is the next slide is my last slide. So I'm happy to answer any questions now or any that might come up later.
I think we're good now. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. So next up, I have listed Port of Homer.
Chair Myers, if we could move, this is Rachel Lord for the record. Brian Hawkins, our harbor master in Homer, is having some difficulties. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to make it. The committee should have his slide deck. If the chair, if you wouldn't mind moving to the next person on your list, I think everybody else is online.
Understood. I believe next up I've got on my list is from Port of Nome. I believe that's Joy Baker.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Greetings, everyone. Okay, I'm assuming, there it is. I can see it on the big screen. Hey, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to present. I'm really happy to be here as representing the Harbor Masters Association. These guys do an excellent job, and that includes the NILS for looking out for the communities and what we need. And clearly what we need is pretty significant when it comes to maritime infrastructure. Next slide.
Ms. Baker, if you could put your name and title on the record.
Sorry, Senator. Yes, Joy Baker. I'm the port director for the city of Nome.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Second slide. So the Nome is located on the southern side of the Seward Peninsula, just south and east of the Bering Strait, and we serve as the maritime distribution center for over 35 coastal and river communities, ranging from the Yukon River to Kaktovik. As you can see from the graphic, the extent of the transits through the Bering Strait and within the Bering Sea are significant, and given the remoteness of the area, and looking at the table, you can see that there has been 110% increase in vessels through the Bering Strait in the last 12 years alone. I will try to skip through these pretty quick. Next slide, please. Didn't see you walk away, sorry. The Port of Nome serves as a critical refueling and resupply point for the vessels transiting to and from the Northwest Passage, or those with just seasonal mission sets within the Arctic region, both of which in this vessel type have grown considerably. This has put an additional demand on our three docks at the port that are shown here in a photo, which already have tight schedules with commodity vessel movements shown on the next slide. Next slide. So we serve as I indicated, the major transshipping point for the region. Cargo equipment and fuel being the primary commodities. However, we've continued to see an overwhelming growth in our export of rock and gravel and sand materials for construction projects throughout the region. You can see the green bars in the graph on the top. The green bar is the gravel, and it continues to excel. We've learned that this year, 21, we will have more material than is shown as in 2020. And I'm quite confident that that's going to continue to elevate based on the fact that we've got so many regional construction projects that are beginning to circle back and start up. We went through several years of low construction in the region, and I'm sure I don't need to explain to this committee as to why that was. It's nice to see the growth and see the employment and see the activity throughout the region. Next slide. I won't go through this, but those of you that are interested can do so later. It's intended to demonstrate the amount of planning and development that the city of Nome has done with the more projects actually that are in active status and in planning status now. There are so many infrastructure gaps that we're trying to fill, just like the other ports and harbors on this doing their presentations here and across the state, that the city has laid out all the projects and tried to figure out what we could invest design and feasibility money on and permitting so that we can do our part to try to get the project to a shovel-ready status. And then we ask the state or we fill out a federal grant application. We understand everybody's got to have skin in the game, and we try to bring our projects as far as we can before we ask for help. So there have been a significant amount of development in Nome, but as the vessel traffic continues to grow, we're still behind the curve. Next slide, please. I can see that. This is the core CAP 107. This is one of the active projects we are working on. We're cost sharing with the core. It's a feasibility study to expand and deepen the federal dredge limits to mitigate significant vessel congestion in the small boat harbor on the right. We're taking the smaller vessels and pushing them upriver to put them into moorage so that the cargo, gravel, and fuel vessels can operate safely within the mooring basin and get their product moved more efficiently throughout the region and back. Next slide. This is the river development. These are just two of the projects we're working on the side of the larger project. This is what the moorage facility layout upriver would look like to separate the smaller traffic from the larger. Next slide, please. The port waste reception facility, we know that there are a few folks in the state, maybe more in the southeast, that actually have a port reception facility at their facility. It's becoming a significant bone of contention in the Arctic, because there's so much concern about oil spills and discharges, bilge water, you name it. And so Nome has taken it on to try to, we have this partially designed. We're looking for funds right now to come up with a full design and construction. And we are hoping to develop within the next 2 years, 3 years, the first port reception facility in the Arctic for ship waste in the U.S. Arctic. Next slide, please. Then we get to the port expansion that most all are talking about. We call it an Arctic deep draft port. Shorthand is port expansion, which has been authorized by Congress last December. And we are in the stages of signing a design agreement with the Army Corps, with the design taking off here probably in a couple of weeks, 2 year design period. It appears that we are now going to consider, the Corps and the city are talking about considering a phased approach to develop the extension to the existing causeway on the west side first, then do dredging in phase two, and then relocate the east breakwater to a causeway in phase three. We are thinking that it's going to be more palatable, and I believe that is probably the way that it's going to come out. But right now, we are just in the design phase. We are hoping to actively have a concept design for phase one here by the end of the year. This gives us five new additional docks, and the three that we currently have are certainly not keeping up. Next slide. Obviously, there are many benefits to developing the deep draft Arctic port. To support life safety and national security. Environmental safety is a critical one. Economic sustainability is huge for our region, as most of you know. Research is growing. We want to support that further than we have been. And tourism, we have been seeing more and more ships, obviously, up into the pandemic. We have more ships scheduled this year that only have domestic schedules, not international. So we are hopeful that we can get the international vessels back next year. This photo here is the tracks of the LNG tankers that came through unescorted this in January. Of course, that could have turned out very different. So we want to be prepared on our side of the line, and we're doing what we can to develop and grow the infrastructure in Nome so that we can serve that role for the state, for the community, and for the nation. And I can't stress enough the importance of the maritime infrastructure in the state. It's a lot different, obviously, down the southeast than it is for the southwest and the northwest, but we all have infrastructure needs, and I agree that I think it should be our goal to try to raise the score on the report card, for sure. I think we should have a goal to get that to an A, or at least a B+. Next slide. This is my last slide. Just a cartoon depicting what the expansion is generally going to look like. And thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. We're going to take just a, unless we have any questions. Okay, we're going to take a real brief at ease. All righty, back on the record here. Thank you. We're going to be moving on to the Dutch Harbor, Unalaska port. I've got, I believe that's Peggy McLaughlin.
Yes, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Peggy McLaughlin. I'm the port director for the City of Unalaska International Dutch Harbor, and I serve on the board for the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators. Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for this opportunity to discuss our port infrastructure needs and development. You should have on yours, I'm not going to turn my camera on because of bandwidth issues. But you should have on your slideshow a picture of the Unalaska Marine Center. And this is our first success story. City of Unalaska, Port of Dutch Harbor, has listed over the last several years three major projects for rehabilitation. One of them was the Unalaska Marine Center. The other one was the dredging of the Inchage Channel to Unalaska and Dutch Harbor proper. And the third one was the Robert Storrs Harbor. The Unalaska Marine Center was a $40 million replacement and expansion program, and it increased the capacity for number of vessels, fuel transfers, cargo handling, uplands, And part of my goal for today is to discuss not just the port and the success stories, but the need for infrastructure and kind to discuss the connectivity in throughout the state and how that bolsters commerce. The International Port of Dutch Harbor is the further westernmost container terminals in the United States. We are the only international container terminal in the state of Alaska. So we have two international ships on a weekly basis, and we have a third company that calls in for international container shipping on a seasonal basis. We are year-round an ice-free port. We're the southernmost port in the Arctic, and we sit directly on the Great Circle Route. We are famously, we are the largest fishing port in the nation by volume for well over 20 years. And as such, when people talk about or think about the Port of Dutch Harbor, they think of fishing. Next slide, please. As we pull back, if we pull back the blanket on the fishing and what everybody thinks about in the Port of Dutch Harbor, we start at the ground level of what is what supports the vessels at the very basic needs. But Unalaska has taken a paced approach at replacement and building repairs for the Unalaska Marine Center and replacing Bobby Storr's. The dredging project has been picked up by the United States Army Corps of Engineers. Unalaska Marine Center was completed in 2019, and Bobby Storrs is now our priority, both with the state and as a community. Bobby Storrs was a state-owned facility, was transferred to the city of Unalaska for $1. It was towed into its current location and configured for the basin that it's in today. It is over 40 years old and has critical failing electrical systems, water systems, the floats are falling apart, and it costs more at this point to repair than it does to actually replace. So this is what you're looking at, is the concept of the Robert Storrs Harbor. It will increase the capacity of the vessels by more than double it. It will take care of the waiting list that's on there, and it will include strengthening the system for the winds generated in that area, electrical system, year-round water, fire suppression, ADA access, and increase the capacity for numbers of vessels. And this particular harbor services our 60-foot and under class, and so our Alaska State Water Fishery vessels, this is their home harbor. Next slide, please. As you pull back the blanket, as we talked about earlier on the fishing, you will see a very sophisticated and competitive, efficient marine transportation system. And what you're looking at here is just a series of stats that we have pulled up for the Port of Dutch Harbor as it compares the port as a whole to the Unalaska Marine Center. So we're talking about 2.6 billion pounds of cargo that transfers over through Unalaska Dutch Harbor on an annual basis. Over 60 million gallons of fuel at this point. Containers community-wide are about 120 to 125,000. About 60,000 of those across the Unalaska Marine Center, a municipal-owned port facility. And then you can dig down there if you wanted to go through the stats individually. You can look at the number of vessel calls and how many of those actually call the Port of Dutch Harbor. Next slide, please. What you see here is a route of the shipping, the domestic shipping routes. And I think this is really important when we're talking about port development and infrastructure requirements on a statewide level. Nothing happens in a vacuum in the marine shipping world. So this outlines the routes as it affects our state. And you can see that those routes coming directly out of Tacoma into Anchorage, and they branch into Kodiak. And from each of those areas, Anchorage has able to put things on the rail belt and on the highway system. And Kodiak services their outlying communities with barge service. Unalaska Dutch Harbor does the same thing. We service outlying communities, the Accutans, the St. Paul's, False Pass, Sandpoint, King Cove, all those areas are fed through a hub system of moving cargo. It's a very sophisticated program, and when one of those pieces is broken, someone down the line is impacted with their ability to service their community with necessary supplies to keep their industry moving in terms of, for us, it's processors. If processors can't get their processing information in there and supplies in there, they don't get to process. They get backed up. They have fish that they can't deal with. Community members don't get fed. We found this particularly true when construction was heavy and when oil and gas was using the port of Dutch Harbor for staging their area. Things were getting backed up because there wasn't enough time and space and availability for all those vessels. Next slide, please. The next slide also shows the fuel routes. And the key piece to shipping throughout Alaska and from the West Coast over to the international trade lanes is the blue line that you see running through that map. And that blue line is the Great Circle Route. If you flatten out the Earth, and most of you probably already know this, it's the most direct route for sailing from the West Coast of the U.S. over to Asia. The fuel lines or the fuel distribution and barges and tankers follow that line, and everything, not everything stops and works in Dutch Harbor, but everything passes right by us. And from there, we end up being a fuel storage hub for places north that get iced over in the wintertime. We certainly supply fuel through to some of those local island areas and store it there until barge services can be loaded up and taken out. And we also do a tremendous amount of transfer on the water. This piece in particular was one of the key factors in getting the Corps of Engineers to take a look at the dredging project for the entrance channel. We have, we are a deep draft port inside, but to cross the bar into the port, we are limited by 43 feet of water. And so the Corps of Engineers did their economic, their cost benefit analysis, if you will, and determined that some of the economic benefits for dredging that, which has been approved at a minus 60 feet, is the idea that we can get the fuel tankers in over the bar and into the fuel dock facilities versus having them lighter on the water. So there's environmental conservation piece in that. Also, container ships are not getting smaller. The D7s that service Anchorage, Kodiak, and Dutch Harbor are almost 35 years old. So the idea that when we rebuild ships, they're not building them smaller, they're building them to take heavier loads and to be able to hit those capacities and service their means in and out of Unalaska Dutch Harbor and through the Alaska waters through the Great Circle Route puts Unalaska Dutch Harbor right in the hub of it all. Next slide, please. This is the Great Circle Route, and what this is this just is a one-day snapshot of the vessel traffic that is in and around the coastlines of Unalaska Dutch Harbor. And you can see those kind of green vessels, if you will, the green triangles are the bigger ships. They're the tankers, they're the container ships, they're the big break bulk carriers. Of course, not all of those stop in Unalaska, but there's about 4,500 of those that pass through our waters as a state each year. But if you look on the broader picture, you will see the coastline and how busy that is all the way up into Nome and further north with vessel traffic and what that means for the ports along those coastal routes in terms of need for infrastructure, for response, for servicing fuel and cargo. So as we look at this, I really try to it's easy for me to put Unalaska Dutch Harbor in the hub of all of this, but really it's really important to realize that what happens in one port desperately affects the other ports and their development and their infrastructure needs. And lastly, one more slide there. This slide is actually just a three-month snapshot of the vessels that call in Unalaska Dutch Harbor. And it's easy, if I had put out a full year, it would just been a big blank bit of color. But this gives you a visual of the vessels. And these are the same vessels that come into our ports, not just mine, but King Cove, False Pass, Sand Point, into the various regions around Kodiak. These are the same vessels that come in and purchase supplies and fuels, and they do repairs, and they use utilities. They deliver fish. They have cargo needs, and they need our harbors. They need to have a place to come in and moor, and then they send their crews out on planes, and that's more fuel sales, and that's more fuel transfers. The tracks of these vessels are the vessels that provide jobs and contribute to the stable revenue sources of our communities and our state. And these vessels aren't just coming into Dutch Harbor, but by utilizing other ports and harbors of the state, they are contributing to the commerce and the stability of our economy statewide. So yes, you know, Alaska is a coastal community and we are a maritime community. It's why I guess we as a community, City of Unalaska, and also as the association, we really do strive to kind of promote the maritime state piece of this, because it really does support not just the other ports and harbors and how we receive goods and services, but it really does supply the state as a whole. And so just as a kind of closing up, these are the projects, last slide, the projects that we have on our list still today is the dredging of the entrance channel, which has been taken on by the Corps of Engineers, Robert Storrs Harbor, which we've listed in CAPSIS. I think this is year eight in CAPSIS, and the Unalaska Cruise Ship Terminal, which is a new terminal, which is kind of low on the priority list. But as we work toward seeing more and more cruise ships, we need a place to put them because UMC is booked with cargo and fuel. And then that terminal during the off tour season would ultimately serve as an additional cargo handling terminal. So that's really just kind of the broad brush from Unalaska. Thank you for your time, and I'm open for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. McLaughlin. Any questions right now? Nope. All right. Well, I believe that's the end of the slide decks that we have prepared, but we do have two more presenters that are online. If you want to, we've got about a little under 15 minutes left to go. If you want to just give a short overview of your harbor and challenges you may be facing there, I believe we're going to start with Mr. Sean Bell from Haines.
Good afternoon. My name is Sean Bell, and I'm the harbor master in Haines, Alaska. And just to clarify, you do not have slides for me?
No, we do not. I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. Well, on behalf of Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators and the Haines Borough, I would like to thank this committee for the invitation to speak today about the conditions and needs of Alaska ports and harbors. Born and raised in the Kenai Peninsula, some of my first memories as a boy are of my family's set net site in Clam Gulch. We later moved out to deeper water and commercial fished the Cook Inlet. My father's drive for new challenges and adventures eventually led us a long way from home, and we tried our hand in the salmon-rich waters of Bristol Bay. Many years later, I find myself in Haines serving as the harbor master for the past 7 years. I'm now able to raise my kids on the waterfront of this great state and support my family from the industry it produces. I'm proud to be a part of that industry and proud to be an Alaskan. During my time here, I've come to understand and appreciate the importance of our waterfront infrastructure. Our fishing fleets depend upon our harbors to safeguard their livelihoods. Our businesses across the state rely upon our ports to deliver the goods they need to thrive. And our community members enjoy these facilities for the quality of life they bring. I've had the pleasure of visiting several ports and harbors in Alaska and have witnessed the success stories of well-planned and executed projects, as well as the struggles of underfunded and failing facilities due to the harsh Alaskan environment and decay of time. Haines, my community, has seen its fair share of both. I would like to speak to you now specifically about Haines, but only because it is where I'm most knowledgeable. please keep in mind that the needs and conditions of the Haines Ports and Harbor facilities are not unique to Haines, but are shared by most small communities in Southeast Alaska. As we all know, marine infrastructure is incredibly expensive to build and maintain. Because of this, the Haynesboro has its ports and harbors only because they were our inheritance from the state and federal government. Our industrial port, Lutac Dock, was originally constructed in 1953 by the United States Army Corps of Engineers. Ownership was later split between the Haynesboro and Alaska Marine Highway. Once passed on to the Haynesboro, the community and the state have benefited from imports and exports of fuel, timber, aggregates, and cargo of all kinds. Our Lutac Dock is a facility that Haynes depends upon for the success of our community, and because of our connection to the road system, it has benefited many others. Unfortunately, because of the engineering methods utilized in the construction of the dock and the steady destruction of time, the dock is now failing. Citing the structural assessment of the Lutac Dock by P&D engineers, the structure has reached the end of its 60-year service life. Further utilization is effectively on borrowed time. This assessment was given 7 years ago. Our cargo ports are so important to Alaska. Their existence encourages growth and helps private industry to unlock the potential of Alaska. But private industry will not invest in an unstable environment. If our port cannot be trusted to be in service 10 years from now, how can we expect private industry to invest in our community? The harbors in Haynes have also been a part of the borough's inheritance from the state. Like our Lutac Dock, the borough did not receive these facilities in top-notch condition, being both undersized and approaching the end of its service life. However, like any other community in Southeast Alaska, Haynes knows how important these facilities are to the survival of our residents and began planning for the future. With the help of the State Municipal Harbor Grant Program, a vital program, Haynes was able to leverage funds to replace the existing concrete floats at our small boat harbor in 2008, a big win for Haynes. With further assistance from the state, Haynes has been able to make progress towards a much overdue harbor expansion. This work began some 30 years ago in planning stages, but finally saw equipment on site in 2017. As we started construction to extend our harbor breakwater to dredge out a new basin and provide for additional uplands, as you can see, well, you can't see from this slide, but if you were to see it, there's a big open basin with no floats. This important work is not yet complete. We have stretched our funding to the limit, but still lack critical economic driving infrastructure for inside our new float harbor basin. Moored floats and a drive down work float still need funding in order to complete this project, a project that is not only an economic driver for Haynes, but one whose economic benefits ripple through the state. I've briefly described two facilities that are critical to the health and well-being of Haynes, and I believe ultimately the state of Alaska. But as I said earlier, these conditions and needs are not unique to Haynes alone. Many small coastal municipalities have been given critical waterfront infrastructure that was old and inadequate for the future. These communities have partnered and worked with the state, federal government, and local industry to keep them functional. Apart from these partnerships, these small communities cannot support these multi-million dollar projects that not only benefit the local residents, but the entire state as a whole. I believe I've heard this several times now in other presentations. Alaska is a coastal maritime state, and we must invest in our coastal infrastructure to thrive as a state. I have no doubt that these investments will pay great dividends in the years that follow. Thank you again for the honor of speaking to this body, and I hope that the AAHBA organization may be helpful to this committee as it moves forward. And apologize for not having slides for you to see. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Seeing no questions, we'll move on to our final presenter. We've got Mr. Mark Hilson from the Ketchikan Port.
Honorable Chairman and committee members, I just want to do a sound check. I'm getting an error that my video is not working.
Mr. Hilson, you're correct. We are not seeing any video, but we can hear you.
Okay. Well, with that, I apologize for the video error. It was working the whole time. I'll just go ahead and give my presentation verbally. So my name for the record is Mark Hilson. I'm the Acting Port and Harbors Director for the City of Ketchikan. I'm honored and happy to be able to talk to you today. Rather than focus on the details of our port and harbor transportation infrastructure and operations, my presentation will turn to our most pressing issue, the financial implications to the Port of Ketchikan from the effects of the pandemic. But first, a brief overview of our facilities. If you were able to see my screen, you'd be looking at our four berth docks. Ketchikan has a unique facility in that our four berths lay parallel to our downtown core. It's a deep water port, a call that has capacity to welcome 1.2 million or more cruise ship passengers, but has limited ability to accept Neo-Panamax vessels. This is concerning to the city because the industry is transitioning to bigger ships. As you know, Alaska has a network of ports that work in concert to make very attractive cruise ship itineraries. Due to our location, we're either the first or last stop for cruise ships. Our port infrastructure is valued in the hundreds of millions of dollars and was essentially unused for all of 2020, and we anticipate it being unused for 2021 for a total of 2 years. On the harbor side of our operation, we have five city-owned harbor facilities that were also, except for one, were all turned back from the state. Our city float was constructed by the city, but all the rest were constructed either by the state or before Alaska was a state, by the territory. All except our largest harbor, Bar Harbor, have been significantly rebuilt. Living remote on an island in Alaska, these harbors provide the necessary infrastructure to accommodate Alaskan residents' water transportation needs. They also provide mooring for a significant number of yachties, our term of endearment, if you will, for folks that take their personal vessels up from down south. So what's our current situation? One of my favorite sayings is anything is possible with time and money. And while I know this is the Transportation Committee, our main economic driver is now sidelined, our port. Our biggest problem is no revenue coming in. Ketchikan has been disproportionately affected by the pandemic, and our port will be, our port fund, rather, will be insolvent by the end of this year. We need an infusion of approximately $3.1 million to remain solvent. Our harbor finances have suffered a lack of a seasonal moorage revenue due to the effects of the pandemic, and those finances are tied very closely to the port because they share many of their expenses. And if I may answer Senator Machiki's previous question posed to Mr. Yucatel, the city of Ketchikan is not in any position to match a 50% harbor grant, and we don't see being able to do that in the near future. Our port fund revenues went from about $10 million in 2019 down to virtually nothing in 2020. And will likely be nothing in 2021. Thinking this through, so you know, how do we typically finance things? Well, you know, conventional financing has been our go-to. We borrowed to redo one of our berths and incurred that financial obligation. But thinking it through, conventional financing is not going to be an option for some time. We've got fiscal constraints on the Port Enterprise Fund, loss of passengers to a new private facility at Ward Cove, and which, I, as an aside, I think the Ward Cove development is overall it's good, but it's going to cause some headwinds for the city of Ketchikan. And then the disruption of the local economy and the city's current debt load all add up to conventional financing to undertake further improvements to the port, just unlikely for the near term. And even if it was likely, the current climate of our residents is not to take on more debt. Our immediate needs, of course, for our operations, our debt service, our lease payments, which are fixed costs, and with no revenue coming in, it makes it virtually impossible to do our port and harbor projects, of which we have several shovel-ready projects. One is corrosion protection. Another is trying to expand one of our existing berths to accommodate those Neo-Panamax vessels that the industry is rapidly moving to. So for us, what we're seeing is more rough seas ahead. We anticipate losing approximately $33 million in revenue for 2020 and 2021. We've got our fixed costs that we still have to maintain and pay. We got deferred maintenance that is getting more and more expensive as time goes on. And we have recovery slowed because of a draining off of some of our customers to a new private dock. And then I'd be remiss, it's my opinion, even though no one probably wants to think this way, but it would not surprise me at all if we didn't have lingering effects from the pandemic in the 2022 cruise ship season. Our mayor did reach out to Governor Mike Dunleavy, and I think he put it really well when he said that this has become a financial tailspin for us and all tourism communities that rely on cruise passenger visitation. And so I think it's a regional issue facing all the maritime communities of coastal Southeast Alaska. With that, thank you. This concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions that you have.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hilson. Well, it is 3 o'clock. Do we have any final questions or comments? Senator Machicki.
Yeah, this is partially for Mr. Hilson, but I guess what I was going to say is I'm going to reach out to Carl and Rachel, probably Brian from Homer, and consider, I'm seeing $23 million in requests or in applicants, which I'm assuming if they're in the program, they've got a 50% match. I didn't realize we dropped off that far recently. My harbor grants were met in Seward and Homer when I represented Homer and in Seward recently, so I will meet with them and share, certainly invite you, Mr. Chairman, and I have a feeling probably most of the committee's interested in having a more detailed chat on prioritizing need. And we've got some ARPA funding. I catch cans in a rough place just because of that lack of revenue. I get it. But we have some ARPA funding, and we know we have an infrastructure package that could be significantly higher. And obviously, I understand the importance of ports and harbors in Alaska. We probably need to get together and chat about this. And I know that Senator Bishop is interested in probably meeting with others as well. So I think we have some work to do. So I'll leave it at that, Mr. Chairman. I will reach out to those guys. Carl and Rachel know how to find me, so we can set something up and maybe have the whole committee sit in on a teleconference on. And I don't mind having it on a public record, but I think it'd be nice for us to actually understand priorities in this realm moving forward.
All righty. Thank you, Senator Machicki. All right. Seeing no further comments, we are at time. So thank you to all of our presenters for the overview today. It's a whole lot of information for us to digest at once. So that'll conclude our meeting for today. Next meeting is going to be this Thursday, April 29th. We will be hearing SJR 14, supporting the National Infrastructure Bank. With that, we are adjourned at 3:04 p.m.